This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast, episode number 18, being recorded on Wednesday, May the 31st, 2006.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
This is a perfect joke for the last day of May when the temperature outside is about 85 degrees. A blonde decides to go fishing, ice fishing, at a frozen lake. She cuts a hole in the ice and sets up her stool. A voice from the heaven booms, "There are no fish under that ice." She moves her stool 20 feet away and drills a new hole. Again, the voice says, "There are no fish under that ice." She makes another hole. Again, the voice informs her that there are no fish. "Is that you, God?" the blonde asks. "No, this is the manager of the ice rink."
Clinton, liberals, dittos.
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of Easta, my friends. Son of Easta, and welcome. You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as... Anyone? Anyone? Yes, Schnauzer Logic. That's right, this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast being recorded on Wednesday, May the 31st, 2006. And my name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman pad attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. And we have an outstanding show for you today. Here's what's going to be happening. First of all, we're going to be talking with Steve Golson. You may be saying to yourself, Steve Golson? Who the hell is Steve Golson? Steve Golson is... friend of mine, genius, super genius, evil super genius, who was one of the writers of a little video arcade game back in the 80s you may have remembered. Ms. Pac-Man? Anyone remember Ms. Pac-Man? That's right, Steve Golson was the writer of one of the guys who programmed Ms. Pac-Man. And he's going to be on talking about sort of the history of video games a little bit. In addition, Steve is married to very lovely, talented writer, Terry Blonder, who is a cookbook writer. And her most recent cookbook, praised highly by the Boston Globe, is about cooking with eggs. And the reason that Terry can write books about cooking with eggs is that Carrie has her own chicken coop. And Steve, being the nerd that he is, has set up a hen cam where you can watch the chickens 24 hours a day. So we're going to talk to him about what it's like to be, the original hen-pecked husband. I get nothing from these guys. Nothing from these guys. All right. Also, we're going to be checking in with our good friend Jason Nathanson, who is still on the road. Been a rocky week for Jason, and we're going to catch up with him. Plus, other assorted sundry and nonsense. Before we get any further, let's say Son of Easter, our good friend Parviz Fatali, Son of Easter, my friend.
Son of Easter, Robin.
How are you?
Good, good.
Yeah, you're pumped?
I'm pumped. Were you working all week on that hen joke?
No, it just came to me.
Mm-hmm.
Let's also say Son of Easter, the returning champion 18 times, Ken. No, it's Sean Meehan, Son of Easter.
I brought my Peabody Awards, too. Son of Easter.
I got my Peabody right here, my friend.
Whoa, you sure do.
It's actually Mr. Peabody, but...
is he a professor?
Peabody?
Did he have a doctorate?
I don't think so. I think he was just...
He was just Mr. Peabody.
I don't think he was Dr. Peabody.
Yeah, there was no honorific that...
I don't remember. Do you?
I don't either. Nope.
Shaking your head on the radio after this is the 18th week.
No, nope. Actually, this is we are completing our fourth month.
Is that right?
Yeah.
We started like the beginning. Happy anniversary.
First day of February.
Huh?
First day of February.
And the last day of May. And so...
4 months.
And so it goes.
And so it goes.
You know, also, the hen cam
fell flat.
The hen cam is going to be visible to you people, not only online, but it's an NBC Tuesday night replacement show. It's a summer replacement. Look for it. I think it's going to be outstanding.
It'll be the last hen cam standing.
Did you see the premiere last night?
I did.
Was it good?
I don't know. Did you watch it?
I did.
We can talk. We've talked about this before. You, first of all, not a big TV watcher. Second of all, not a big reality TV watcher.
No, but we're talking Last Comic Standing.
Yes. We are talking Last Comic Standing.
But I would love to hear it because I enjoy the guy, the head dude, the big cheese.
That's Jay
not
Moore. Him.
Jay not, Moore.
Not there.
No.
What? What? What?
They got a new guy. What's his name?
We'll get into it. You are listening to Schnauzer Logic. We're 6 minutes into this week's episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Parviz Vitali, and Sean Meehan. Let's say hello to our regulars. Hello, Kipadada. Hello, Michael Zwirling.
Stroke or unload.
Hello, Dick Cheney. Hello, Harry Whittington. Reminds me that the guy that used to be the weather announcer in New York, Lloyd Lindsay Young.
Lloyd Lindsay Young.
Lloyd
yeah.
Lindsay Young.
Yeah.
Yeah, he changed his name because too many L's. Yeah,
He's probably one of the most uncomfortable weathermen on the radio. Lloyd Lindsay Young
on the radio.
Yeah, what he's on KGO.
He's
so uncomfortable. Every time he's on the air, the banter he has with the host always is uncomfortable. Always.
But he sounds great. This is Lloyd Lindsay Young bringing you your weekend weather.
Hello, San Jose.
Right. Well, he started back in New York, so he was on WOR. Which is the superstation?
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah, but of course, the fact that he was... Yeah, but it was a local station. It wasn't a network or anything of that nature. And he used to turn to the side of the mic and go, "Hello, Newberg!" You know, these little tiny, goofy, you know, "Hello, Secaucus! Here's the weather for you tonight!" You know, and very kind of dramatic. And we figured, well, that would be the end of it. So I moved cross-country to get away from Lloyd Lindsay Young.
He followed you.
I'm turning around the dial.
I bought a George Carlin DVD, and who introduced George Carlin in New York? Lloyd Lindsay Young. So he must have been either a George Carlin fan or just a big weather guy.
George Carlin, New York?
Yeah, he had an HBO special. And
oh, okay.
George Carlin had an HBO special, and introducing him was Lloyd Lindsay Young. I said, wow, no
very
kidding.
Cool.
I guess he was pretty popular in New York.
So popular, he's now here in California.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Hunting Robin like caribou.
And Robins don't make very... Oh, you mean me? Wait a second.
No, we meant the other Robin.
Hey. All right, so first of all, the beginning of today's show was supposed to be the commencement address. And those of you listening to this part of the show may realize that a few minutes ago, there was no commencement address. Like my own college career, kind of delayed by a few months. Class of 79 didn't actually get the degree until 80. So, first of all, I blame the listeners because if there's one thing that I learned,
we don't have any listeners.
Yeah. No. What I learned in college was because, I have a master's degree in city planning.
Blame assessment is an important part of that curriculum, is it not?
Yes, it is. It is honor for those who had nothing to do with the project, and blaming of the victims is a big part of the whole urban planning process. So we had asked on the blog page and in the show itself to get people to send us little pieces of information that they would want to pass along to new graduates, things that could become part of a commencement address. And we got, I think, two pieces of advice. One was, don't ask the listeners for information about the show. It's not their job. No. It's not participatory. No, we got two pieces of information, and that was not enough to make a full sandwich. So
even with condiments?
With condiments, with the ciabatta bread.
Oh, that's good.
Even with ciabatta, ciabatta bread?
Mole
yeah,
sauce.
Ciabatta bread. Mole. What?
It's terrible.
What's terrible?
Ciabatta bread.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a big ripoff.
Okay, explain.
Because the dimension of a ciabatta bread is significantly smaller than buns or whatever. It's a ripoff.
It looks huge in the TV commercials.
Sure, because it has little boy hands holding the sandwiches.
Oh, I don't know. I've seen Jack's head.
That's true.
Little boy hands
are holding the...
Wasn't that a nursery rhyme? Little boy hands, come hold my buns.
That's how they do a lot of pornography, too. That's... all right, bring out the little boy hands. We're going to... It's all done with tricks, like
make the sandwich look bigger.
Are you saying when you went on your first date with your Wexter and you and your wife, you had a...
I had little boy hands.
Little boy hands.
Look at me. Yeah. It's like how they do the elves in those Rings movies. It's
CGI? That's what they say about black men.
What? What about
they have little boy hands?
No. Elves? No, they have small hips. Therefore, it makes their penis look larger.
I think a moment of silence is in order at this point.
It's also what they say about Angelina Jolie.
Yeah,
you
really.
Know, the little hips make her penis just look extraordinary.
Hey,
thank you very much. All right.
Look it up. I feel like we're on that Fox, you know, Secrets of Magic Revealed. This is our own little...
Yeah, you'll hear more about it. It'll come up somehow.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take more breaks. More breaks is good or better. Okay, so there is no commencement address this week, which means everyone listening gets another week to send us wisdom.
Send us anything.
Yeah, like just get a life.
What did your mom and dad tell you? What did your uncle tell you? What did your grandparents tell you that stuck with you in your head, right?
You have 2 weeks to get all your shit out of the garage. We're changing the locks. Oh, it was
like, don't drive with a half tank of gas.
It was a rhetorical question.
Full. Yes.
Whenever showing your penis to a woman for the first time, make sure you use little boy hands.
Yeah.
New from Mattel. Little boy hands.
Oh, they're new, but they're not from Mattel, my friend.
And also little girl hands.
Was that Michael Jackson?
Could be.
That was poppin' fresh.
They were not able to convict him of that, by the way.
Poppin' fresh walked.
So send in.
Yes, thank you. That's what I'm trying to say here. We want you to send in. What were you, aphorisms? Is that what they would be called?
Yes.
Aphorisms.
Aphorisms.
Aphorisms,
my
friend.
What's the first thing that comes to your mind, Sean?
Yeah, give us an example. You weren't here last week. That's why the bit sucked.
Of an an aphorism might be a stitch in time saves nine.
Okay.
Or a penny saved is a penny earned.
Yeah, you obviously didn't hear the show last week.
No. No. Well, by the way, Bob Lamb, he got a restraining order against us ever calling him again, just so that you know.
Why? We wake him up?
Yeah, he named you.
Yeah, he realized I was Persian.
Yeah, that's why he did it. I want to talk about that. You have a plumbing update this week.
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. So,
therapy update.
So we want people to send in their advice. And what we will do is we will craft this into a bit of comedy gold. Much like Superman was able to take coal, comedy coal, and crush it between his mighty thighs to create comedy...
Crappy movie.
I saw that episode. That's not how it happened.
Were there little boy hands involved?
He was a little boy at once, lifting up a car, I believe.
Ma and Pa Kent.
That's right.
That's Batman, isn't that?
No, it's Superman. The Kents.
That's right. You're right. All right.
Clark Kent.
Sorry, dude.
Batman was the old man, the butler.
You know it's not real, right?
It was episode three in
DC Comics.
Yeah, like the duck that swallowed the alien.
Oh, yeah.
I want to talk about that, too. All right. But anyhow, so we want people that Robin@SchnauzerLogic.com. That's the email address. www.SchnauzerLogic.com. That's the website. And you can put comments into the blog page right directly there, right? Or you can send us email. And we want these little aphorisms, such as a stitch in time saves nine, or fool and his money are soon parted. Those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Things you'd say to a graduate. The other comment that we got this week was, why the fuck are you spending so much time talking about American Idol? This is a worldwide radio show, and most of the world doesn't give a crap about American Idol. Eurovision, the Eurovision Song Contest, that, my friend, reaches a potential billion people with a B.
Yeah, well, it's too
people
late.
With a P.
American Idol's
that
over.
Still leaves like 5.5 billion people out in the cold. They think they're so important on the continent.
And so I did a little looking up to figure out what the Eurovision Song Contest was all about. And after searching multiple websites, including the official Eurovision Song Contest webpage, and Wikipedia, and the BBC's webpage, and Answers Please, and numerous articles, I realized I didn't have the foggiest idea what the fuck the Eurovision Song Contest was all about. Apparently, it started in 1955, so it's been going for...
70 years.
And math was a requirement for
50 years. I threw out a number, and then I knew I had time to correct myself.
I see. So you're going for that Southern California plumber's action going on there.
Hey, I'm pretty
impressed. We don't have a math test. All right, Hank. Apparently, every year they change the rules. So for the last 51 years, every year they've changed the rules about whether the songs have to be performed in a native language or English, whether the songs are 3 minutes or 3.5 minutes. But basically, it is a country-by-country song contest where each country decides, using their own rules, to choose a song and performer for that country to represent that country, and then they send them to a battle of the bands to the death this year in Athens, where the winner was Finland for the first time in 51 years, much like the Red Sox. They broke the curse of the babushka. So today's show, in honor of our myriad listeners around the world, we're going to be playing songs that were entries in the Eurovision Song Contest, including, at the end of today's show, the number one song from Finland.
If you looked carefully, though, this year's rules also included the leg press. It was more like the modern biathlon. They do some singing and some riding, and then they lift an enormous amount of weight. And the Finns are extraordinary. They're very gifted. They've got big quads. So I think the fix was in.
It says here in an article that was on Salon that they claimed an audience of about 300 million viewers.
Wow.
That's about as many as we have, huh, for the podcast?
That's about as many. That's more people than voted for president of the United States. That's that stupid stupid statistic they kept repeating over and over again.
It's like McDonald's once again. It's like one person voting 60.
All right. We got Wow, you shut down real quick.
When I see the hand.
Wow. All right, so what we're going to do is we'll take a break. We'll play some tunage today from the Eurovision Song Contest. Let's see, what are we going to start off with here? What's a good one to start off with? I think we'll start off with...
Give me the titles.
Well, I don't have them. They're all in funny languages. So what we'll do is we'll go by country. I think we'll start off with the number three. This country came in number three. It was Bosnia-Herzegovina. They came in number three. So we'll sort of play little bits and pieces.
I think that was a skater at one point.
Okay, so...
I think.
I'm sure it makes...
It probably was a skater, a little girl skater at one point.
When we listen back to Brian Boitano, is that what you were going for?
Not at all.
Okay.
Herzegovina. It hurts my covina.
With little boy hands.
With little boy hands.
All right. We'll take a break. We're losing energy, right?
No, we're not.
We just got to slow
no,
down here.
No, we're not.
All right. Bosnia.
I can't wait for Brian Cox.
Littleboyhands.com. We need to register that domain.
I think so.
Little boy.
And we'll have cops at our doorstep anytime.
All right. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. You can tell we didn't have anything prepared for this opening segment, and yet we've managed to get through it. Stick around.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Vjetar miriše i bol me prati kao sjena, dal negdje za mnom uzdišeš, gdje si od mene sakrivena. U kosu stavi ruzmanin i jedan cvijet kraj šadrvana. Lejla, zar bi mogla ti drugog voljeti? Muzika.
što volje tebe.
We feel that in every way, this new radio series offers an unusual opportunity to combine broad popular appeal with truly distinguished radio treatment.
Oh, and this one time, at band camp, I stuck a flute in my pussy.
Frisco!
Hello?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We are 22 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Parviz Vitali, Sean Meehan.
That was rocking.
That was rocking.
Sorry.
Whoa. You know, I thought things were bad in Bosnia-Herzegovina, but damn, I didn't know they were that bad.
They're not all, you know...
It's not all smiles and sunshine there.
We need to get the translation for that song. You thought you had some of the words translated?
Yeah, I thought so. But I'm not positive. I think the words were, you know, I'm sorry I wrote this song. It ain't getting any better.
I
lost my dog.
they're gonna open for Yakov Smirnoff in Branson. To look for him.
Do you think they TP anybody's houses out there?
Why? Because it's so hard to come by toilet paper?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't...
You think during graduation they TP people's houses?
Yeah, during graduation. All right.
I mean, that would be odd, huh?
Yeah. All right. Per capita, the U.S. spends the second greatest amount of money...
Tom Wolf. Oh, wait. Is this John DeCohen's money? Because I'm ready.
You've been waiting for the last few weeks?
I have Tom Wolf. I have all those answers memorized.
Per capita, the U.S. spends the second greatest amount of money each year on breakfast cereal. Which country is the first?
Oh, China.
All those Rice Crisps.
No, it's actually Britain.
Oh.
All right. The first year a box of chocolate was sold, and it was in 1861. What way?
What, like extortion? What would be an appropriate answer?
All right, forget it. If you were to visit an average household, you would find five of these inside.
Mexicans.
Oh my God. Well, it's good because we've hit the blacks now. We've moved on to the Mexicans.
No, isn't that true? What's the answer?
That's it. We're over. All right, it's a real short show. Thanks very much. We got to get out of here. No.
Wait a minute. I still wanted
five
to.
Of them. There's nothing in anybody's house that there's five of them.
I wanted to do some gay bashing. Is it? Yeah, turn that down. Bring us back. All right. I wanna... No, would it be televisions?
It would be calendars.
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 Good. We're a healthier people than I thought.
According to industry figures, 40% of the world's almonds end up where?
What bashing were we going to do?
Yeah, all right, there you go. I'm just trying to save us all, that's all. Okay.
If this was win John DeCovid's money, any answer John would give, it would be fine.
It's chocolate bars.
And that would have been my answer, too.
20% of the world's peanuts end up in chocolate bars. And then... later on.
In chocolate bars.
In your toilet. All right. Oh, man. Well, I'm sorry about
that.
That
is fun trivia. You got one more? One more.
No, I have four.
Well, no, you never revealed the actual chocolate box sold. The first chocolate.
Heart-shaped box.
Ah. There we go.
Listen, you get what you pay for, and this is free show prep. It says right there, free show prep number 204.
It does indeed.
Say free show prep. There you go. All right. So did you watch Last Comic Standing last night?
Okay, I was so looking forward to it. I was so looking
really?
Forward to it. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm always excited to see new talent. Okay, I'm watching it with Melanie, and there's nothing. I'm telling her, it's not if they're funny. It's if they're good television. Because there were some people that were funny that didn't make it and vice versa. And some people that weren't funny that they called back. So I told her, it's got to be good television. They got to be able to be good television, not necessarily funny.
And what did I think of it? I was ashamed for Mark Price, Skippy.
Oh yeah,
Family Ties.
Well, there were a number of professional comedians that tried out that did not make it past the first round.
Yeah, that's why I don't think that they're good television. That's what they're looking for. They're not looking for talent. That's my thought.
You think they're looking for a train wreck?
They're looking for another Rich Voss. They're looking for another Ant. They're looking for somebody with that's going to bring something to the show. Ant was a horrible comedian.
Well, so is Dat Fan.
Yes, exactly.
Nobody knows where Dat Fan is now.
Well,
I guess his mom does. Dat Fan, where's Dat Fan?
I got to come up with a new one for China.
Well, or yeah,
Godzilla.
Because Sean and I were talking the other day. I was taking a trip and I was going to Japan.
Ding 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 ding.
And then after spending a week in Japan, I went to China.
Ding 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 ding.
And then I took a quick plane ride over to Vietnam.
Ding 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 ding.
And then we went over to Taiwan.
Hot roll. Hot roll.
What?
In Taiwan, there's a lot of hot rolls out there.
But you didn't even set it to music.
Hot roll. Hot roll.
Hot roll. Okay, so what did you think of the show?
It was stupid, here's the thing. These shows bother me, okay, at some very visceral level. We talk about, it's not just that Last Night show or any of the shows. These supposed talent shows bother me for, and I couldn't figure out why, and then I put my finger on it. Name for me someone who is successful in any of the performing arts who got their start through a talent show.
Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah, okay. So we'll give you Kelly Clarkson. She's free parking in the middle of the Monopoly board, okay? Mm-hmm. Who else? There isn't anyone. That's not how you get into the business.
And I would put the reverse to you. Who in the business, now I'm thinking largely of American Idol, but who in the business would actually have done well in American Idol?
Absolutely. Exactly.
You know, Tom Petty wouldn't have made the first round. You know, many icons of international
music, right?
Yeah,
Richard Pryor, early Richard Pryor, early Bill Hicks, early George Carlin. People, that's not how you do it. It's not about winning a contest. And so, as I watched the show last night, it was bothering me that these people were prostrating themselves. Is that the word? Prostrating?
Yes.
Prostrate? Themselves, they were sort of felt like they needed to bow before these two guys. You know, Jan is a stand-up comedian. Jan gets booked. She hasn't been booked for about a year or so, but she gets booked on Letterman and these other kind of programs. And basically, you have bookers who decide what they think, as you say, is going to play on the show. And the thing that's important to remember is that has nothing to do with how talented you are. Zero, zip, zilch. How many comedians have passed through the halls of the Conan O'Brien show? They got to fill time. Right, Conan has on comedians at least 3 times a week, right, in his evening slot. They come through, they do their 3.5, 5-minute segments. They're playing at Mr. Pips or the Laugh Bone or, you know, Shecky New York or whatever the hell it is, and they're getting a little spot there, and they're the headliner on a weeknight. They're not a weekend headliner, they're a weekday headliner, and they're going to be there Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and that's it, and then they're back on the road again. And these are not people that are making any difference in the field. Now, I'm glad that they're out there working, but these shows have nothing to do, and so I think it dissuades people who have talent from actually just going out and being talented. If you've got a talent as a musician, just go out and fucking sing. If you have a talent as a comedian, go out and fucking tell jokes. If you've got a talent as an actor, go find a troupe and just go fucking act. You don't need the kind of verification, authorization, the
and regimentation.
Exactly.
I completely agree with you. I think you've really struck something, because I too have been off put by these programs, and there's a mediocrity that is instilled in these people that I find there's no danger, there's no passion, there's no, you know, you're right. An early Richard Pryor would never make this show.
Absolutely not.
You know, these comedians are, this is very homogenized, processed kind of comedy. It is very homogenized, processed music on American Idol. These are not, you know, you think Alanis Morissette would have, anything off of Jagged Little Pill would have gotten her on American Idol?
Or
not a thing.
Or Counting Crows?
Or Counting Crows? Mm-hmm.
I mean, or you know, Coldplay, not my favorite band, but I mean,
all these people would not make it, and the people who do make it would be fine guests for Merv Griffin.
The Beatles would have lost out to Herman's Hermits or the
Monkees,
Dave Carr
yeah.
Five or right yeah. Exactly, because those shows those were sort of cuter and they didn't seem as dangerous.
Yeah.
And Lennon was always a little dangerous.
I agree. I think that if you have a passion, you should follow it. And these programs process you.
And I think that then results in people believing that that's the way you become famous. Right? It's subverting the product, the process of creativity. I mean, where is the show So You Want to Be an Artist? And every week they sort of take pieces.
It is coming out soon with Regis Philbin as host. But
well, that's the thing. So there is this new show that Simon Cowell is producing, right? This massive talent show. And
right.
I looked at it and I thought to myself, that's not talent. Those are novelty acts. Those are acts that are fit for the Joe Franklin show.
No, exactly. They're fit for TV. That's what makes good entertainment.
Well, no. I wouldn't equate those two. What makes good entertainment and what's fit for TV are...
Well, that show... Well,
what do you think defines good entertainment?
Something that keeps your interest. Schnauzer logic.
You think just keeping your interest is sufficient?
Yeah, because I don't think entertainment you want to think. I mean, there's certain entertainment where you go to a movie, you don't want to think about it. You want to get lost in the world of the movie.
That's interesting. Does entertainment have a responsibility more than to delight? Must it engage? Must it have other parameters of operation? Does it have to challenge? Does it have to do these things? I don't know, but I think that you could support a position that says entertainment is shiny, pretty things that sparkle.
Yeah.
I think if you come to the conclusion that all entertainment is simply shiny, pretty things that sparkle, then you can come to the conclusion that all meals... have to have sweet tastes and
sugary content,
right? And we don't care about the nutritional value or the balance of those things.
Look at America. I think we've made both those decisions. In large measure, I think we have.
Yeah.
He said large measure.
Without little hands.
The little hands make it a large measure.
Help me. If there's a comedian out there working hard in the clubs and night after night playing in front of 10 people and he has the opportunity to be on national television, even for an audition, and his buddy's going to go on it, whether he cares, his buddy, you know, it's tempting. You kind of have to do
it. I turned down the opportunity to bring this show to a 10,000-watt regional radio station that gets streamed all over the world 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. Now, on your theory, that's a nutty thing to do.
I think you enjoy this organic form of entertainment. More so than having somebody over your shoulder telling you what to do.
Yeah, but which one has more art attached to it?
Oh, definitely this, but I think people
are hungry
to be...
Is entertainment equal to art?
People are hungry to be stars. They really are. And they'll go through any lengths to get there.
All right, we'll play another tune at this point. We're going to go to Germany.
Deutschland. A little bit of Scorpions?
No, we're going to go to Germany. We'll come back on the other side. We'll be talking to Steve Golson. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Parviz Vitali, Sean Meehan. All inviting you to please stick around.
Viva la radio. Stick around for more Schnauzer Logic.
My love is stronger now than you'll ever know. And I won't ever let you go. My love is wider than the ocean can be. And it's deeper than the deep blue sea. My love goes higher than a mountain can rise. And I see it there in your eyes. My love gets tougher when the going gets rough. And believe me, I got more than enough. Keep trying, babe. Keep holding on.
from the top of the Empire State Building.
Actually, it's a second bedroom with some bath mats taped to the wall.
And broadcasting loud to all time zones around the world in stereo.
It's a medium bitrate podcast. Oh, and it's mono.
This is
Schnauzer Logic!
Welcome back. We are 40 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Parviz Vitali, Sean Mann. So that was cool tunage.
Very nice. Very unexpected.
That was Germany.
Yeah.
Am I on?
You mean on your game?
That depends.
I don't think I'm... Am I on?
Yeah.
Hello? Right.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead, say something funny.
Yeah. Don't get me started.
I didn't detect any craft work in there. I didn't detect any Audubon.
Audubon.
No Falco.
Yeah. The songs are all over the place. And what's so, we talked about at the beginning of the show a little bit. What's so strange about the whole Eurovision contest is that it was English. Then they said, no, it needs to be, it must be in the national language of the country. Then they said, well, no, that's too complicated for some countries because they've already decided to choose English language songs. So they're making them go back. We're changing the rules again. Oh, it needs to be 3 minutes and 50 seconds because that's the maximum length you could put on a little 45 RPM record. Oh, well, that's not good. That's too long. Let's make it three. And so it's...
It's wacky and constantly shifting like the sands
European.
Of the desert.
It's European. It's a whole EU kind of thing. And it all has soft edges so nobody can hurt themselves. Welcome back. All right. But you stayed awake for that tune.
I did.
All right.
I did. I did not doze off.
We got more tunes coming up in the show. We got Finland. We got Greece. We got Spain. We've got Denmark. And we have Iran. Amazingly, we've got an Iranian entry. Maybe we'll play that at the next break. How do you like that, all right?
I'd like that. My people.
All right, that'll be your peoples.
My peoples.
There you go. All right. So I mentioned at the beginning of the show that I have a friend who is... one of the original developers of the video game Ms. Pac-Man, and Steve has gone on to do many other brilliant kinds of things. His wife, Terry Blonda, is an author of many, many cookbooks, and her latest book, recently reviewed by the Boston Globe in just an amazing way, is about cooking with eggs. And so as part of the whole process of creating an egg cookbook, Terry has a chicken coop with multiple numbers of beautiful chickens. I mean, this is not the stuff you see at KFC, my friend. These are chickens. These are gorgeous little birds. That's what I'm telling you about. These are some nice chickens. These are good chickens. And he's got a hen cam. And so I said, well, I got to tell me about the hen cam, and maybe we can pick your brain about what happened with Ms. Pac-Man. So right now on the line is our good friend Steve Golson, son of Issa. Steve, welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Sona Vista, Robin. I'm glad to be here.
It's good to have you here. And where are you? We're speaking. You're up in Toronto. Is that right?
I am in Toronto, eh?
Yeah, that's a perfect accent. That's it's flawless. Couldn't tell that you were
He's Al-Qaeda.
I've had days of practice up here, you know. We've been going to like Tim Hortons every day for lunch, you know, and getting a donut, eh?
That's actually pretty good.
Yeah, that was
not bad.
Yeah, you can fool customs with that.
So I said during the intro that there's a lot of little things to talk to you about. Let's just start off a little bit of history, because I think most people know about Pac-Man. I mentioned to Parviz that sort of your early claim to fame, rather than some of your later claims to fame.
Yeah, and better to be a has-been than a never was.
There you go. That's advice to put into our commencement address. I'm going to write that down. We're writing a Schnauzer Logic commencement address. We're looking for little aphorisms from people, and we're going to better to have been a has been than it ever was.
Very similar to what we were talking about earlier about entertainment. Better to be a has been than it ever was.
That's right.
There's no connection at all. What are you talking about?
These people get one shot at fame. Don't worry about that. We'll move on.
We'll come back to that later.
Yes, we'll just insert it. Yes.
So. Everybody knows about Pac-Man, and I think people assume that Ms. Pac-Man was just the same company doing the same thing, and that's not what happened.
No, that's not what happened. So the quick story is that there were some fellow MIT students and myself started up a company to do video game enhancement kits.
And what does that mean exactly?
Okay, so if you're an arcade owner and you pay $2,500 for an arcade game, you get lots of revenue from it for, you know, 6 months, 9 months, for a while. but then the players learn how to beat the game, and your revenues go way down. But there's nothing physically wrong with the game. I mean, the monitor's fine, and the switches are fine, and that sort of thing. It's the software that they're beating. And, of course, the arcade owners, the game manufacturers, they say, well, just buy a new game from us. And so we saw this little opportunity to sell enhancement kits, which would basically be software upgrades for existing arcade games.
All right.
And the first game we did was Atari Missile Command. We created a kit that we called Super Missile Attack, and that had some success and some fun with that. But the problem with Missile Command was it was late in the market. We timed it wrong as we came into the market. It was already declining. But the next big thing we could see coming was Pac-Man. Pac-Man was going to be a big hit. This is in 1981, early 81. And it's just starting to climb up the charts,
with
if you
songs
will.
And the whole popular culture.
Exactly right.
Okay.
And 1981 was just the year for Pac-Man. They sold, Midway in the United States sold 96,000 Pac-Man games. So that's nothing to sneeze at there. That's some serious money for 1981. So we worked on our kit. It was called Crazy Auto was the name of the kit. And I'm jumping ahead quite a bit, but we ended up licensing that directly to Midway, to Bally Midway, to produce as a complete game rather than as a kit. But
well, they sued you. Isn't that what happened?
Well, no. The first suit was, I skipped over all those fun details. The first suit was we got sued by Atari.
Okay.
Atari sued us for $15 million for unfair trade practices and trademark infringement and patent infringement and all these fun things. And so we ended up going to federal district court and trashing and pounding them, and they dropped their suit, mainly because they knew that we were going to keep working in the industry and we might as well work for them. And so they dropped their suit and hired us with a fat engineering contract to do game design for Atari.
A classic story from that period of time.
It was a real hoot. It was a lot of fun. And so we got to pal around with the Atari people and the Warner Communications people, and so it was quite exciting. Much more fun than actually going to school, so we all dropped out from MIT.
Well, see, this had a happy ending. I'm glad, because when you first said, well, those are the first lawsuits, I thought, oh my gosh, we're taking this poor guy back to NAMM. You know, this is... Yeah, you know, I was in a tiger cage for months and
working on the code.
That's right. That's right. Just working away. And so with the way our agreement with Atari was, we said, so we're negotiating with Atari, and we said, well, we've got this kit we've been working on all this time through this whole lawsuit with Atari, which went on for several months, and we want to be able to reap something out of this kit, this investment we put in. And our agreement with Atari was that we could sell kits if we had the manufacturer's approval.
Gotcha.
So we totally bluffed Midway. We called them up and said, look, you may have seen that Atari dropped their lawsuit, and we just totally trashed those guys. At this point, our agreement with Atari was secret, our development agreement. So all anyone in the industry knew was that Atari had filed this lawsuit, and then they dropped it. So we call up Dave Morofsky at Midway and say, Dave, we're about to bring a kit out for you, and we don't want to go to court any more than you do, and just, you know, man-to-man here, let's sit down and talk about any problems you think you may have with us so we don't have to trash you in court as well. And Dave thought that was such a stand-up thing to do that we flew out. And the total bluff here, total bluff. And well, you got to see, Dave is having a really rough time right now, you see, because people are bringing out oodles of counterfeit Pac-Man stuff. Pac-Man t-shirts and Pac-Man anything. So his poor copyrights and trademarks are getting violated left and right. People are bringing out entire counterfeit Pac-Man games. In a matter of weeks, a new game would get completely cloned to get brought in from the Far East. And so Dave's busy trying to maintain his monopoly on Pac-Man, and we call him up rather than just trashing his intellectual property. We
and
call him up first. He thought that was really, really cool.
You're the solution instead of the problem.
That's right. And so we went in to see him, and we showed him our kit, showed him our game, and he said, that's really cool. Why don't we just buy it from you?
And
so
after
some negotiation, we licensed it to him, and they eventually brought it out as Ms. Pac-Man. It went through several name changes for a while. Our game was called Crazy Auto, was the name of it, as we developed it. And at first it was going to be Super Pac-Man, and then they decided, well, let's emphasize the female character and let's make it Miss Pac-Man, M-I-S-S Pac-Man. But if you've ever seen the cartoons that run through Ms. Pac-Man, there's a whole sequence of the male and female characters
having a little baby
and fall in love and have a baby. And so some brilliant marketing person says, oh my God, we can't have her have a baby if she's Miss M-I-S-S Pac-Man. So then it briefly went to Mrs. MRS Pac-Man.
The whore.
And so so we go and change that, and then finally they came and said, no, MS Pac-Man. Oh, okay, fine, we'll make that one last change for you.
Well, I'm very glad to hear this, because as you may know, this show is all about being culture warriors. And we were deeply concerned that your use of this feminine empowering term, Ms., led to the degradation of and the disintegration of our traditional family values. And you were like on the front lines of the early assault against the American dream. And I'm just relieved to hear that there was a lot of concern over these questions of value.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. People used to ask me, what do I do for a living? And I would say, I corrupt the youth of America.
He's honest. I love that.
All right, let's cut forward to the future, which is actually the present, if you're looking at it from the past. And wow.
Onward into the future.
Oh, man. I just blew my own mind, dude. So now you are a consultant, sort of an industry consultant. You get involved in design and also litigation and all of those kinds of things. So probably not as sexy as being a corruption of the youth of America. Is that fair?
That's pretty fair.
All right.
Right now, my corruption is a lot more controlled, I would say.
Localized corruption.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. One of my mottos is, they do not pay me for a solution, they pay me by the hour.
Okay, that's number two.
I've learned from the best of the attorneys. What can I say?
I remember,
including you, Robin.
I remember early on when you and I first met, because I went to MIT too, and Steve was one of the very first private clients that I had when I moved to Boston and started my own practice. And Steve understood the business of being in business. I had only worked for other people, either in corporations or law firms, and Steve worked for himself. And you actually recommended a couple of books on consulting for me that I purchased and read, and at least began to understand the business of being in your own business, which was very, very important. So I owe everything that I am to you today. To you, over.
Really? Oh, my.
I know. It's scary for everybody involved.
Where's my percentage?
So, we move to today. So,
yeah.
The reason that I sort of contacted you in the first place is because you have this wonderful little project that's going on right now. You've got this hen cam that's up on the web. And the web address is www.hencam.com. Is that right?
That's correct.
Not to be confused with hencam.co.uk, those bastards, those limey bastards.
They're actually very nice people, but don't get confused.
They're chickens. I'm telling you, they're just chickens. So tell us about the hen cam. Tell us about how it came about, what you did to sort of put it all together, and where people can go see it. Because, these are some gorgeous chickens, let me tell you. They're beautiful-looking buds.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear that. So my wife, Terry, Terry Golson is her, how she publishes her book.
Okay.
Worked in the food industry for quite a while. She's been a chef. She's been worked in a health spa, worked in French restaurants, worked in bakeries for many years now. And she's been writing cookbooks. And this is her fourth cookbook that is just published. So she's had this background in the food industry. Well, we've had chickens for about 10 years now. We've had backyard chickens at our house just outside of Boston in a rather rural suburb. And what started with a neighbor up the street who had one hen, which was a former 4-H project, and they were going away for the summer, and they said, would you take care of our hen? And we said, sure, we'll take her. And that was a lovely little white Cochin named Buck Buck was her name. And little known to me was that my wife had this hankering for chickens in the backyard. she has an agriculture degree. She used to ride horses for a living, and so this was her back to the earth, back to the farm sort of thing, and she
wow.
thought this was wonderful. And so you get one chicken, and, well, you can't have just one chicken because they're social animals, and so you end up with a second one, and then you get a third one, and then you start going to chicken shows, and the next thing you know, you've built a barn, and you've got 11 hens in your backyard.
Is that what happened, Steve? That's Is that really what happened?
That's really what happened. What can I say?
So you're saying that the chickens came first?
The chickens came first.
Just needed to clear that up.
At so, least in our household, the chicken definitely came first.
All politics is
local.
And then
the eggs come, and then you say, wow, that's kind of wonderful. And the fresh eggs from your backyard hens are amazingly wonderful things. They taste different. They look different. They cook different than what you can get at the store. And Terry's agent said, what are you going to write next? And Terry says, well, the only thing I'm interested in writing about is eggs. Okay, fine, write an egg cookbook. And so her most recent book is The Farmstead Egg Cookbook from St. Martin's. It's just been published within the past week or so, so you can actually go and buy it. So that was that's her cookbook. And I've been trying to come up with an excuse to put a live camera in our chicken house. And so this was the best excuse. Oh, it'll be great for marketing, don't you think?
Once a nerd, always a nerd.
Absolutely. And so I said, so last fall, we knew her book was off to the publisher. And so I said, well, we're gonna do this. She hired a web designer to do her websites. She has a personal website, one that focuses on the book, the hen cam, and then about chicken keeping, chickenkeeping.com. If you want to keep your own backyard hens, how to get started. So, but I was in charge of doing the camera, and so we've got two live cameras that are streaming out onto the web, and so you're welcome to go to hencam.com and watch our hens.
Now,
and
do you worry
you're
about
lucky you might see our rabbit?
Now, do you worry about the issues of privacy? The fact that you're constantly invading the privacy of these chickens?
Of the chickens, they don't seem to mind.
Okay,
they've signed waivers.
Yeah, but it's hard to read this signature. It's all chicken scratch.
Oh, but I've learned to read from the best.
So. There you go. So, how many different kinds of chickens are there? Because when I went to the website, there's a nice little biography of each of the chickens.
And, yes, our in bios.
I think when people think about chickens, you know, you think about, I mean, most people, the closest they get to a chicken is their local McDonald's, right? Or KFC. And
exactly.
So, and all the chickens are the same color, this delicious golden brown color. But in the
That's
real
right.
world, in the real world, they're very, I mean, the variety is in size and shape and color is amazing. Some of them look like they have fur. And how many different kinds of chickens are there? And how many different kinds of chickens do you guys have?
Well, how many different breeds there are is a good question. There's perhaps 100 different breeds of
good.
Chickens.
Okay.
And I mean, there are chicken shows you can go to. There are people who raise them and go to competitions, sort of like dog shows. You know, who's got the best Schnauzer? Well, you can see who's got the best, Australorp or
have little boy hands to show them.
Yeah, they go to chicken shows and they clean their feathers and oil up their combs and make them look beautiful.
I've done
that. Imagine that.
And have you shown any of your chickens?
No, but we have bought them from shows.
Okay.
We've gone to local shows sometimes the chickens are for sale, and so you can buy them that way.
Now, if you have all these chickens, in order to get eggs, don't you have to have a rooster?
It turns out that you don't. So the chickens will, the hens will lay whether you got a rooster or not. They just will not be
fertilized.
They're
just not fertilized. Yeah.
I see.
So at these shows where you've got the various kind of prize-winning chickens, I mean, are there people who sort of stud these, you know, like stud roosters and chickens that, is there breeding? Are these some sort of eugenic results or people that serious? Are people that into it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you're serious into this, then you're doing your own breeding. So you would have your own mating pairs, and you would raise them and breed them and try and... People concentrate in a few different breeds, and And so you would concentrate on those and try and build up your bloodline and breed your best ones.
What kind of things do you breed for in a chicken? I mean, I'm kind of serious here. I mean, do you breed?
Well, if you look at the Standard of Perfection, which is the name of the book, which tells you what to look for in all the different breeds. And so it'll be, you know, one particular breed, it'll be the certain shape of the feathers and the shape of the head and the color and all these different things. Sort of like in dogs, what makes a golden retriever that is the best golden retriever in the country that wins the Westminster Dog Show?
But it's all different when you go to, like, Korea because it's just good eating.
Taste, yeah, it's all taste.
Good eating for all dog breeds.
Does it smell bad?
Absolutely.
Does your backyard stink?
No. If you're careful about it, it's not. And I mean, yeah, they can be smelly, but you clean up your chicken house. It makes wonderful fertilizer. So we compost it all.
Ah. Do you sell it?
No, we use it all. We don't have enough to sell it.
All right.
Do you have Tamiflu stocked up?
Well, now that is an interesting question. So here's Terry with this wonderful book coming out all about how to keep chickens in your backyard and fresh eggs and whatnot. And gosh, is this like the worst marketing moment in the world?
The Avian Flu Cookbook.
Exactly. Excellent.
Roast your troubles away.
The shorthand in the industry is AI or avian influenza.
I see.
But I'm actually not concerned because the places where it's a real issue are places where people and chickens live in very close proximity all the time.
It's density.
If you're in the Far East and you've got chickens in your house and you live next to them all the time, that's where you have a real problem. I'm not concerned at all in the U.S. because
and where are your chickens located?
They're in the backyard in their own little house.
Oh, okay. So
a separate residence.
I see.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is ultimately it's a zoning problem.
True. Exactly right.
I see. It's the same thing
with private bedroom sort of problem.
It's the same thing with in-laws. If they live in the house with you, it's a problem. If they have their own space, not so much.
Yeah, that's you put grandma up above the garage and it's okay. You don't get the grandma flu.
So where do you...
One hopes not.
Where do you see this going?
Well, that's a good question. We're getting a tremendous amount of traffic here. I mean, it's a wonderful opportunity. People... strike that. So Terry is getting a lot of feedback from people about this book, but everyone wants to talk about the chickens. If she goes to give a talk about her book and her recipes and whatnot... People ask about the chickens. They want funny stories about the chickens and how they behave and how they work. And the egg recipes, it seems like sort of an afterthought. People say, oh, yeah, that's wonderful. Nice egg. Gee, thanks. Tell us about the chickens.
You hook up with Andrew Lloyd Webber. You got a musical.
You think so?
I hear he's available.
Up with a catchy title.
Yeah.
The Producers. See, that's already taken.
So
layers? No, so, that doesn't quite work.
Are you this cock of mine? No, but so
that could be.
That's trademark.
We've got more books in the works.
Do you
more books in the works? More on the chickens.
More chicken books in the works.
More chicken books than egg recipe books.
Now a friend of mine is well known in New York. Her name is Weinstock. Now, of course, I forget her name. I think Miriam Weinstock, she is the cake lady of New York City, like the most famous cake baker. And
yes.
I know her. She's the mom of my good friend, Amy Weinstock. And her husband, Ben, was a fairly well-known New York attorney who ultimately gave up his legal practice in order to become the guy that drives the truck around in Manhattan with the cakes. And in fact, when I was younger and used to hang out with Amy all the time, I used to go on runs with Ben, and he and I would carry wedding cakes all over the place. Do you see your life turning that way? Do you sort of see yourself becoming sort of Mr. Chicken?
Well, I do feed them every morning and change their water.
I don't mean this is a bad thing. You know, I mean, maybe...
Let me tell you, I eat really well because I have my wife cooking these wonderful egg dishes. So it's a good life, believe me.
And you're not worried about cholesterol? It's just that's a myth.
It's less of an issue than it was in the past. But, you know, if you eat a couple eggs a day, that's no big deal.
All right.
Everything in moderation.
Well, putting that down as well. That's number three. We got three wins. It's like, it's better to have been a has-been than it never was. Something about selling your soul by the hour.
No, no, no. They're paying me by the. They're not paying me for a solution. They're paying me by the hour.
Not paying solution, paying hour. And what was it? He just had another one. Wasn't one
it was,
that
it was the golden mean.
The what?
The golden mean.
The golden me?
Mean.
Mean?
Yeah.
What?
Aristotle. You know, all
no,
things in moderation.
Oh, all things in moderation. Oh, I thought that was an original. You didn't come up with that, Steve?
Oh, I can't recall now. I have no recollection, Your Honor.
All right. Well, I'm sure they'll let you back across the border. Hey, listen, thank you very much.
I hope
much.
So. It's hard getting in, believe me.
Just tell them you know a couple of chicks. www.hencam.com. That's the website where you can see the beautiful, beautiful chickens. And the name of the book again?
The name of the book is The Farmstead Egg Cookbook by Terry Golson.
And it's available on Amazon.com, I'm sure, and just about everywhere
Absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely. If you go to HenCam, you can click through there to the other sites. There's a site about Terry herself. There's a site all about the cookbook with some astonishingly beautiful photographs.
Yeah.
Ben Fink did the photographs for the book, and they are absolutely stunning. So food photographs and chicken photographs.
Wonderful. Steve, thanks so much for being a guest on the show, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Now you know more about chickens.
More than I ever thought I would. They don't breed for buttery goodness.
No?
They breed for rounded feathers and things.
They're beautiful. You got to go to the webpage and take a look. They're magnificent. You know, when I was a kid, I grew up in the Lower Hudson Valley, which was all agricultural, and so we used to go to the Orange County Fair.
What?
Every 30 seconds, dude. The
I
coughing
had a cough.
And the sneezing. And
I'm
the...
not coughing in the mic. I'm waiting for the flatulence.
Yeah, really. I don't worry about the avian flu. I'm worried about the Iranian flu. We need to find some way of sort of decongesting you before we come in here. Maybe we'll just kind of
give me like a colostomy bag or something.
Menthol. No, we just need to like stuff you full of menthol, I think. Just
yeah,
kind of
just some Vicks VapoRub.
Vicks VapoRub and a lozenge. I think that would that would help you.
What a life he has, huh?
Just
what
chill.
A life.
Oh, it's the but I remember going when I was a kid to see the chickens at the 4-H chickens. And, you know, you think of a chicken being white with the red thing and the comb and the television chickens, foghorn, leghorn. There are so many other varieties of chicken. It's unbelievable. All right, here's what we'll do. Take a break. We'll play the Iranian entry.
Nice.
In your honor.
Nice.
For the Eurovision Song Contest. When we come back, we'll be on the phone with Jason Nathanson. How does that sound to you?
Sounds great.
Are you excited now?
Another nap coming.
Oh, sorry.
Just edit that part out.
Oh, yeah, well. All right, you're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, and sometimes Parviz Vitali inviting you to please stick around.
I think you're a refreshing gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
I can't see.
100% uninterrupted direct digital feed straight from the pleasure zones of your brain.
All night long.
What the hell is this?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're 12 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic, being recorded on Wednesday, the 31st of May, 2006. My name is Robin Goldstein, host, buddy, and pal. Also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. www.schnauzerlogic.com is a website. Robin@schnauzerlogic.com is the way to send email to the program. We're also over on MySpace. It is www.myspace.com/SchnauzerLogic. SchnauzerLogic.com. Like the Iranian entry there?
That was probably one of my favorite songs. That was a complete surprise.
You couldn't wait to get out of the room,
could
you?
It's very warm in here. But I'm stepping outside and I'm getting the evil eye or the goo-goo eyes. I wasn't quite sure.
Thanks, dude.
That was cool.
That was you.
That was, yeah.
Tell people what they just heard. That was not the, there is no Iranian entry in the,
in the European
2006 Eurovision Song Contest.
That was my second band called Redshift, and that was me singing the song called Addiction. We wrote that song about 10 years ago or so.
Wow.
And that was my second band, and you know, it was cool. It was. I haven't heard that song in probably 6 years or 7 years. It's wow.
Now
it was cool.
Now my friend Marjorie sent this to me.
Marjorie's the best.
Marjorie is absolutely the
best. She's so cool. She's so nice and supportive.
Where did she get this?
Well, about 10 years ago or so, she knew my guitar player Jason, and okay, so she knew Jason, and Jason must have given her. But then now, 10 years later, we're on this podcast. And I think I mentioned Redshift before on one of the early podcasts, and it came to her. She said,
"But I mean, you guys made CDs."
Yeah, yeah,
you
we
sold
had
them?
A couple. Yeah, we sold CDs. We had T-shirts.
So why have you not brought them into the show?
I will.
Yeah, because that was good.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I guess you know, there's a moment element of insecurity or whatever. You know, you just. I don't know.
Dude, we're doing a podcast in a fucking second bedroom.
Yet you,
you
and
were
you know
able
what?
To
how many people listen to this podcast?
Live.
How many people listen to this podcast every week?
Hundreds.
Yeah, somewhere between 500 and 1,000 on a weekly
basis.
That's
more than we ever played for in Redshift.
Yeah, but, I mean, so we should be expanding.
Yeah, that, you're right.
Yeah!
I like the name, too, sort of the, kind of, do all your bands have physics references or optics in their
Well, it's either Blue Shift or Redshift, and then we got a lot of crap for being either Blue Red Shet or a Red Shirt. So it's like, you know, maybe it wasn't such a good idea. Actually, I joined a band named Redshift, so I really didn't have much say in this band name.
Okay.
All right.
There you go.
Well, that was very nice, Robin. Thank you. That was very cool. Thank you, Marjorie. That was a nice surprise.
We do what we can.
That was cool.
I know. All right. And now you can go back to take a nap again.
Okay,
like,
thank you.
I know that's really important. You need to get your beauty rest. Here we go.
Yeah.
I wrote this song too.
No, you didn't.
All right.
Well, he sneaks around the world from Vienna to Carolina. Sticky-fingered Filcher from Berlin down to Belize. Take you for a ride on a slow boat to China. Tell me,
where in the world is
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van?
Where in the world is the bald Jewish guy in the 98 VW van? Jason Nathanson, tell us where you are, my friend.
Hi, Robin. I'm in Winslow, Arizona.
And you're whispering.
Well, every time I come on, you say I'm too loud.
That's
so
true.
I didn't want to hurt your sensitive eardrums.
I have to tell you, I was prepared to be blown away again, and I've potted you down a little bit, so now you're back at full strength.
Okay, good.
All right, cool.
Did you just come
I'm
from Phoenix, Arizona?
Winslow, Arizona.
Let's say that again. I think we stepped on the line.
Did you just come from Phoenix, Arizona?
Yes, I did. Actually, I didn't make it to Phoenix. I got sidetracked.
Okay, I'm done. I'm gonna go nap with Parviz now.
That's a
hey,
reference,
Jason.
To
the... How was Vegas?
Vegas was good. Didn't we talk about Vegas last week?
Yeah, and the week before.
Yeah.
Well, obviously you were there for 17 weeks. I thought you would have a story about Vegas.
No, I left Vegas after taking them for about $400 on my last day. So. Vegas is done, and I'm glad to be out of there.
And so the plan was that you were going to be leaving Vegas, having had the van repaired, and that you were headed off to Texas. And so now, being a week later, we catch you in Texas. No, Arizona. Getting closer and closer to home.
Eventually, I was going to Texas, but I was going to stop at the Grand Canyon first and see these waterfalls, which I saw, and, you know, eventually make it to Texas. I don't know that I plan to be on Texas right now, but that's definitely not happening because there's more car trouble.
All right, so we're going to pull up the story. So you were at the Grand Canyon over the Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah. I got there on Friday. Luckily, got a campsite because it was all pretty full.
Sure.
Looked around. You know, kind of walked around, and it was cool. It was definitely big and expansive and interesting. But
you weren't impressed.
It didn't blow me away, and I mean, I don't know if it's fair to put that on the Grand Canyon, but after you've seen so many pictures over your lifetime and National Geographic specials and stuff. It's kind of hard to live up to the hype, and it really didn't, I guess. Especially after seeing Arches National Park in Utah, which was that blew me away. The Grand Canyon kind of had a lot to live up to, and it didn't.
All right, so that was over the that was over the Memorial Day weekend, and then
that
you got back in. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And then I got back from there on Monday morning, took a helicopter out, which was, again, another very cool experience, and drove from there heading towards, I figured I'd spend the night in Sedona, which I'd heard a lot of cool things about.
It's very beautiful. Went there a few years ago, yep.
Artist colonies and, you know, jewelry and stuff like that.
Yep.
So I'm driving there.
And they have there are lots of energy vortexes there.
Energy vortexes and magnetic fields.
Yeah. Did you go to the energy vortexes?
Are there really actually energy vortexes there that you
sure,
go to?
Sure, of course. I went there. One of them I got a little horny. and in another one I just got a headache.
Okay.
Which
so
is a lot
like Viagra, basically.
So on the way to Sedona, I'm driving on Highway 40, almost to Flagstaff. And all of a sudden, I hear this huge whoosh sound behind me. And I look in my rearview mirror, and this truck just absolutely barrels off the highway into this huge ditch and almost flips and smashes into these rocks and comes to a stop.
Wow.
And for a second, I'm like, well, what'd I do? Do I stop? And, you know, I immediately stop, pull over. Run across the highway back about 300 yards to where the crash had happened, and a couple other people had stopped, and run up, and it's this one lady by herself in a truck, and her shirt was off, and she was holding the shirt to her head where there was a huge, gushing, kind of bloody head wound, and I go, and I'm holding open the passenger door because you can't get into the driver's side because there's all these rocks, and people are trying to help her and keep her calm, and she's just kind of going nuts like anybody would. And she's hurt all over, and there's blood everywhere. And after a couple of minutes, she takes the shirt off her head, and the blood had stopped rushing, so I guess that's a good thing. And the paramedics come, and they extricate her out of the car, and it's this whole big process. And at this point, everybody else who had stopped for the crash had left, and I was the only one still there.
The Good Samaritan.
Yeah, you know, I try. And the paramedics, like, oh, she'll probably be okay, but her left pupil has been blown, and it's a very traumatic experience.
Yeah.
I give my statement to the cops, and, you know, I'm thinking, you know, she's alone in her car, and, you know, she's just coming back from a good weekend. And,
you're alone.
You've got a shot at her.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You might be able to pilfer her van.
Hey, the first step, you already got the shirt off, so.
you're taking this horrible experience and turning it into something for comedy, and that's not right.
You're jealous is what you're saying.
So that made me stop and think and, you know, slow down for a little bit. And then I go into Sedona and another beautiful drive down this canyon into Sedona and hang out in the town for a little bit and camp for the night. Was hanging out there for a while. Then it started to get late in the day, so I decided, okay, I'm going to leave, start to kind of amble towards Phoenix. Get in the car, I'm driving out, and I see a market somebody had told me about the day before. So I stop there to get some food, and as I'm pulling in, there's all these film crews. There are a bunch of people in the film crew taping this one woman as she's getting out of her car, an African-American woman. And I'm looking at her and I'm thinking, okay, that's kind of weird. We're in the middle of Sedona. You know, what kind of show would be being produced here? and I get closer to looking. My first thought it was maybe Whitney Houston doing that Bobby Brown reality show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get up closer to her, and I look at her, and it's not Whitney Houston, but I don't recognize her. So I'm wondering what's going on, and I walk inside the store, and there's another woman being filmed, and she turns around, and it's Oprah Winfrey. In the middle of Sedona, Arizona, in the middle of nowhere, basically, is Oprah Winfrey being filmed by a crew shopping in a market. And everybody's just kind of standing around staring at her. And it was a very weird moment because you don't expect Oprah Winfrey to be in a market somewhere that you're, you know, on this road trip.
Unless you're in Paris and it's Hermes.
Exactly. They let her into this market and let her shop. So, you know, she's in the market and I'm kind of talking to the clerks and stuff. And they say, you know, they had no idea she was coming in. This is totally, I'm trying to figure out why she's here. And being filmed. Is she on, like, some Oprah spiritual quest in Sedona? You know, what's going on? Nobody really seems to know. So she leaves, and I go back out to my car, and I call my parents, who I think would, you know, find this the most intriguing. And my mom says, well, did you get a picture? And immediately I'm like, fuck, no, I didn't take a picture. And I had the camera right in my pocket, and I didn't even think of it. So, you know, and I want to post this on the blog and, you know, tell the story to you guys, but it's less meaningful if there's not a picture to go along with it. So Sedona's not that big. I get in my car, and I figure I'll just drive around Sedona for a little bit looking for Oprah because she's with four cars and this huge film crew.
And easy to spot is what you're saying, you racist bastard.
She's a black woman in Sedona. She sticks out, okay? So I'm looking around. Driving around for about 15 minutes, don't see her. So I decided to drive out of town again on the same road, almost right near the market. Boom, all of a sudden, I see the whole crew. I'm like, sweet. Flip a U-turn, go over, and get out of my car to take a picture, just as they're all piling back in their cars, and they leave. And I take a couple pictures, but I couldn't get any good pictures. But I noticed that when they got in the cars, Oprah and her friend
Gail.
Got into a Chevy sedan type thing.
Gail?
Yeah, Gail. Which I didn't realize until later that it was Gail. Gail King, her best friend.
Gotta be Gail.
They get into a four-door Chevy sedan, like something, a mid-sized car you'd rent from any rental agency. And they're driving by themselves. There's no other film crew, producers, or anything with them. And in the three cars behind them are bodyguards and all those other things. So now I'm like, okay, this is weird. Why is Oprah driving herself? I mean, somebody of her status.
He had sex with Oprah.
Did I have sex with Oprah?
That's where this is going. I can tell. I just got a feeling. You boned Oprah.
You passed yourself off as Stedman.
And you boned Oprah.
Yep.
I hope you used the little hands.
Right on the ball. So I start following her, figure she's going to stop somewhere else in Sedona, and I'll just get out and take a picture real quick.
Now you're stalking Oprah.
Now I'm kind of stalking Oprah around Sedona.
No, you're not kind of stalking Oprah.
Well, and here's the thing. I'm stalking her for no real reason. It's not like I love her and I'm a huge fan of her. I'm just kind of interested, and I kind of want to see where this is going to go.
Like any healthy American, you are mesmerized by celebrity.
Yeah, it's Oprah. I mean, you know, of all celebrities and stuff, she's self-made, and she's worth more than any other woman in the world, basically. And that's kind of intriguing. So you kind of want to get next to that. So I'm driving, following her.
Put me off a little piece of that.
She's driving out of Sedona, and, you know, I figure any minute she's going to stop, and I'm going to take this picture. But she keeps driving. She keeps driving, and 15 minutes later, I'm still following her now.
She's fleeing. Fucking right, she's
down
fleeing.
The highway, side by side.
Yeah.
You've been like playing chicken with fucking Oprah. Oprah!
We're on a road, and I'm right behind her caravan, so it's pretty obvious, you know, that I'm following them. And then we get to the major highway that heads back north to Flagstaff, where I just came from. I'm like, do I keep going? Well, there's a KOA in Flagstaff. I'll stay there the night because I want to do laundry anyway. That's fine. I'll follow them for a little bit and see what happens. So get on 17, and I'm following them, and we go up this big hill, and, you know, the van doesn't have a whole lot of power, so it's not that easy to follow a caravan of people. And I lose them and then come back over this hill, and I find them again. And so now I'm behind them again. So I'm following
Oprah,
them.
Oprah! I love you, Oprah!
Can you just see Gail?
My baby, Oprah!
Gale, have we lost him?
So I find him again, and now it's been like, I don't know, half an hour or so, and they're heading towards Flagstaff, and I figure, okay, she's probably going to go in the airport in Flagstaff and take off on a plane to wherever Oprah goes, and that'll be the end of it.
Dude, well, we get to the 40, fucking point, dude. We don't need a mile-by-mile description. Cut to the chase, dude.
No, I like it. It's like OJ. It's like the OJ escape. I'm liking this.
So now I'm following them east on Highway 40 for no reason. And it's been about 40, 50 miles or so. And, you know, I'm waiting to see them pull over, but
see the water?
In my mind, they're going, I really want to find out what's going on. Why is she driving the car? You know, who are the other people? And I know it's a little insane, but I'm rationalizing it.
How well would you have done at school if you had had this kind of tenacious attitude toward learning?
What do we do at this point?
I want to hear what happened to Oprah.
There. Hold on, he's still there?
So I keep going on Highway 40, and now it's like 100 miles into this that I'm following her from Sedona. And I'm really starting to question myself. Like,
so what are you doing after the show today?
I'm going to find out what's going on with Oprah. I want to ask him if Oprah is just as ugly as everybody says she is.
Do you think that this is what happened to that poor woman who jackknifed and trashed the truck?
I'm afraid to ask, though. I don't know. Let's see if he's still there. Hello?
Okay.
Yeah, no, keep going.
Okay, so I'm trying to rationalize this, and I'm thinking, you know what? I got nothing but time, I guess. There's nothing really to do. I might as well keep going. So I keep going, and we're getting, kind of in the middle of nowhere in Arizona, and I start to think, you know what? Okay, this is enough. I've proven something about myself that I don't really like here. I don't know what it is, but this isn't healthy. So I'm going to pull off at the next big town I see or next camping sign that I see, and I'll just stop. So we're at about 120 miles at this point, and the freeway starts to really slow down because they're doing construction. And Oprah and the whole caravan get off at this Econo Lodge / gas station. And I'm like, okay, now I'm faced with a decision. Do I actually get off and follow them and complete this?
Dude, we got about a minute before we got to go to the news at the top of the hour.
and so they get off, and I pull off, and I'm sitting there for a second deciding what I'm going to do, and I get out of the car, and I bring my camera with me, and I walk over, and there's Oprah sitting there by herself in the passenger side of the car with the door open, and there's nobody around her at all. So I walk up to her, and I say, hi, Ms. Winfrey. My name is Jason. I just wanted to get a picture, and I've been following you from Sedona. And she looks at me, and she's like, from Sedona? You're crazy. And I kind of look and, nod in the affirmative, because at this point I feel like a loon.
But she did fire her taser at you, correct?
Well, there were bodyguards. There were big bodyguards standing off, like, on the other side of the, 200 feet away or something. If I wanted to kill Oprah at this point, I could have killed Oprah very easily.
And that's the moral of the story. The moral of the story is, if you wait long enough, you'll have your chance to kill Oprah.
Damn, so I left my bat
and
knife in the van.
I say, my mom's a really big fan, and she'd kill me if I didn't get a picture, so that's why I've been following you, and can I take a picture? And she looks at me, and she's like, really tired from traveling and sore, and she kind of slowly gets up and reluctantly says, well, okay, if I have to, kind of thing.
Is she beautiful or no?
She looked good. She looked kind of old.
We literally have like a minute left. So
okay, so I take the picture of her because it doesn't look like she wants to take a picture with me. And then she says, "No, you got to be in the picture too." So she calls her assistant over, takes two pictures of us, and then I'm turning to leave, and I turn around and I ask her, I'm like, by the way, what the hell are you doing? Why are you driving by yourself or with your friend? And it turns out she's on a road trip, too. She, for the show, 10 days, going from Santa Barbara to New York. She's on her own little road trip. And we sat there for 10 minutes talking about road trips and stuff like
That's
that.
That's the greatest fucking story I ever heard in my entire life.
But next time you tell it, right at the end, she throws you her jersey.
Thanks, Oprah.
Jason, did you get a chance to get Oprah's shirt off of her?
No, I didn't.
All right, dude. So next week in Texas, right?
Well, the car's fucked, and I'm going back to L.A.
That's the end?
And the great sir, I told you, man, it was just a big long drive around the fucking block.
It was the Oprah thing that killed it.
Dude, we gotta go. Yeah. Listen, have a safe trip. We'll talk to you next week, maybe back in Los Angeles, all right?
Bye, guys.
Tomorrow morning, KSCO, or you can listen on the podcast. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, we'll be back on the other side. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Stick around.
Funny comedy.
Those tree hugging sissies.
Now your host, Brian Cox.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Road Stories of the Real Highway Comics. I'm Brian Cox, and you know, some people have mentioned that traveling with comics must be a nonstop laugh fest. Jokes all the time, that sort of thing. Actually, people, comics are some of the most serious people that you will ever meet. Observant, yes, but serious. They have a lot of time to think. Now, here's a story of too much devious time on your hands. Tony has been in the comedy business for over 35 years, and he didn't want his last name used in this piece, and you'll understand why. You know, he used to run a famous comedy club in San Francisco. He was a comic. He was an agent for a while. He's worked with such people as Lenny Bruce, the Rat Pack, and many more. And like the rest of us, he's out there on the road right now. And this is is one bad trick on Tony. You see, Tony hates border and immigration officers of any kind. Now, not hate, that's kind of a light word. I guess we could say paranoid, completely paranoid of these people. Now, Tony was coming into Canada by bus, an 8-hour bus trip. Two comics were asked by the agent to pick him up at the bus depot, drive to the next gig about 3 hours away. The two comics were given the wrong time for pickup by the agent, and they ended up in the bus depot for like 8 hours. What did they do? Drink coffee all day long. So by the time Tony showed up, they were like completely buzzed. And they devised a really weird and devious joke to play on Tony when he arrived. As they were sitting in the bus depot, buzzed on coffee, a real macho security guard, you know the type, passed them several times. The comics laughed and commented, "Hey, look at that! What a dick!" Anyway, they realized that this guy could help them out. Knowing that Tony hates anybody in uniform, the two approached the guard with a super idea. Asked the guard if he would be the first one on the bus and ask for Tony blank, blank, blank. Because they explained to the guard that Tony would actually melt in front of anybody in a uniform. The guard asked if he could get one of his friends in on this scam. We said, "Oh yeah, the more the merrier." The bus pulls in, the two guards jump on board yelling, "Mr. Tony, blank, 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 Mr. Tony, blank, blank, blank." Anyway, Tony is just got this weird look all over his face, like he is scared. He gets off the bus with the two security guards. The two comics are hiding, watching all this. They rush him into a small office. He told them that there's a comic coming to pick him up and he had to get to the next show. They told him immigration had a few questions for him. Tony puts his luggage up on the desk and starts ripping out shirts, pants, shavers, underwear, everywhere, yelling, "I'm legal! I'm legal! I have papers somewhere!" The two guards leave the room because they are starting to laugh hysterically. Then away, they called over one of the hidden comics and looked in the room and told Tony, "Immigration is now here. They've got a few questions." Tony took one look and went, Oh man, this was a setup, wasn't it? Anyway, he spent the next 3 hours cleaning his pants and looking for the hidden joints he had in his luggage that nobody knew anything about. Anyway, the two comics laughed all the way. Tony got wrecked and he sat in the back seat and slept. That's it for Road Stories of the Real Highway Comics. Thanks for listening. I'm Brian Cox.
Fucking exhausted. I've blown a pupil. Oh man, welcome back. We're 43 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Parviz Vitali, Sean Meehan.
A lot of traffic story with Jason, huh? Car's turning over, he's following Oprah.
Oh man.
Did you ever see the Grand Canyon?
Yeah, and he was underwhelmed.
He was underwhelmed. Yeah. Yeah.
I had a very different response to the Grand Canyon. You know, as he was saying, I'd seen it pictures, I'd seen it in films, and when I saw it, it didn't compare. I had exactly the reverse experience. I had seen it in pictures and films when I was in its presence, because the aspect ratio of the Grand Canyon is greater than Super Panavision.
Yeah.
And it was religious for me. It was very powerful.
Well, that part of the country, you've been to that part of Arizona.
Yeah.
Have you been out there?
Yes, I have.
It's magnificent.
I've been to Sedona as well. It's beautiful.
It changes you.
Yeah, it's red rock everywhere.
It changes you, yeah. I went there before my my kidney surgery for kidney cancer 2 years ago, took a bunch of photographs and put them up all over the hospital room, so that I could have something to remind me of just the
serenity.
Majesty. Well, the majesty of life. really was that. I mean, that was very, very moving. I suppose if I had photographs of Oprah, I would have put those up on the wall. And reminded me of Stedman. You know, she does
look like a catcher's mitt, doesn't she?
I spoke to Jason earlier this afternoon. He told me that he was having car problems, that there was white smoke coming out of the back of the van. I go, ooh, they've elected a new pope. And I guess they blew a head gasket or something like that. So he's going to have the van shipped back, you know, on a flatbed to Los Angeles, and he's going to fly back. And so it's like, you know, that's the whole big, that's the cross-country trip, you know, circa 1823. When the country wasn't very large, I guess. But he'd shown me the photograph of Oprah, and when I looked at the website initially, I thought, oh, that's just some sort of, you know, short, chubby black woman that he met along the way. And I was making fun about whether he said he followed her, and I thought, oh, he had sex with this young woman. You know, this is a woman he met at a truck stop, and he had sex with her, and he kind of followed her someplace, and he kind of picked up on her. And he said it was Oprah, and I go, oh, yeah, sure, you know, racist bastard. Every black woman, it is Oprah. You know, in my mind, I realized not every black woman is Oprah, just this one, apparently.
Well, it is. You brought up the image on his website, and even as he's telling the story, I didn't think that that was a picture of Jason with Oprah. I thought maybe someone else in the entourage, maybe Gail, who I'm not familiar with, or someone else, but I had no idea that was Oprah.
Yeah. All right, let's get to this week's plumbing update with our good friend Parviz Vitali.
When the ice comes and the snow, and it's 48 below, and then the temperature begins to fall, and they hear the moan and whine of the frozen water line, then the plumber is the man who saves them all. Oh, the plumber is the man, the plumber is the man. Down into the cellar he must crawl, he must crawl. He is not sleek or slim, and they all look down on him, but the plumber is the man who saves them all.
All right, my friend. Was machst du?
I'm going to lie down for this one.
All right. This is your time.
Yes, this is my time to vent and get out what I need to get out. Everything was going fine until about an hour before I left work today. And God, I'm just so tired of talking about this. There's no yogurt updates. There's no cottage cheese. It's just bashing. It's this guy's just a jerk. Oh,
this is the foreman?
Yeah. This guy was unreal. I was working today side by side with a 30-year veteran in the trade, and he yelled at him yesterday, and then he yelled at us too today. And I'm just, I seriously, I was looking at him, and I was thinking, this is absolutely unreal. It's just truly unreal. He's got to show his manhood or something. So I just kept staring at him, and I was talking to the 30-year veteran today, and he said, you know what, unfortunately, in your case, you're going to have to say a lot of yes sirs and oh, I'm sorrys and stuff like that. And I'm like, ah.
So were you rightly implicated in some kind of error? Or
no, I had no error. I had no error. He's trying to make an error, and I'm correcting him, and he didn't realize that he made the mistake, and then he looks like an idiot, and it's like, why do you even jump to conclusions? Why don't you think it through before you start accusing people? It's just a personality I've never met in my whole life that I'm dealing with. It's just unreal.
Really?
Absolutely unreal. And I know, Robin, you think it's me.
No.
Last week, I heard the podcast, maybe it's you. And then I start reevaluating myself, and I go to work, and people say hi. I don't say hi back. I'm like, maybe it's me.
Well, first of all, you shouldn't fucking pay attention to what I have to say about life. I'm barely able to get myself dressed in the morning, okay? And so I don't have any answers for anyone except myself. I just have questions. I have no answers. I just have questions. You may look at your life and go, no, fucking Robin's wrong. It's not me, it's him. And you know what? That's an okay answer.
I know, and I have to go with that answer.
And that's you want a lifeline? 50-50?
No, that's what I'm sticking with. It can't be me. Oh, unreal. So it's like, it's almost becoming a joke. It's laughable. I drove home today. I started thinking, unreal. I've got to deal with this shit for 5 years.
You won't be with the same guy on the same site.
I won't be with the same guy.
That's a good question. So when is this part of the, when is this gig over?
When there's no work, or if I'm just so unbearable that they can't work with me, they'll ship me out.
Okay.
It really is to that point. I got my first evaluation yesterday.
Yeah, well, tell us about it.
Okay. And he's the one that evaluated me, this guy.
Makes sense.
I've been working with him for a month.
And the moron, the very first thing was punctuality. Okay? What's punctuality mean?
Showing up on time.
Timeliness.
Okay. I have never been late once. Okay? Yeah. And he writes, there's poor,
fair.
Fair, average, above average, excellent. Those are the grades.
Okay.
He puts average, right? And there were eight other categories. One was initiative and playing well with others and stuff like that. And those were above average, average, above average, average. But I'm looking at punctuality, and he wrote average. I said, what do you mean average? He's all, well, it's you know, it's. I said, I've never been late once. Never been late once. I'm always here 5 minutes early. I said, how do you get an excellent? Do you have to be here at 30 minutes early and give you a back rub? How do you get excellent?
That's a good question. What did
you
say?
And he's like, well, I don't see you when it's 6 o'clock comes. I don't see you. Everybody else, this guy is out to get me. So this is exactly what, this is what's going on. I'll tell you right now what's going on. The right. next evaluation, he's going to bump it up to above average. The next evaluation, he'll bump it up to excellent. And it makes him look like a god because his boss is saying, wow, this guy's really putting Parviz, getting Parviz to show up on time. And nobody knows except him whether I'm on time. Everybody knows I'm on time. It's absolutely absurd. It really is. That's absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
So this goes back to the union hall, and they look at it. They look and go, "Wow, he's average on punctuality. Average means you show up late once in a while. I've never been late once. Never called in once. So how do you get an excellent? That's absurd."
Perhaps he's grading on the curb. Perhaps everyone is always completely
punctual. I thought with the plumber,
punctual.
You'd be blaming on the level, curving on the. Sorry. We'll take that part out. Go ahead. Say it again.
Just jiggle the handle.
No, I'm done. I'm just saying that maybe everybody shows up on time. Therefore, you are by definition average.
Let me ask you a question. What does it matter in the real world what grade he gives you?
Well, because he can determine my status in the union. I mean, they can. I'm on a 12-month. I'm on a 12-month probation.
Okay.
So at any point in this 12 months, I could be fired for anything. The union doesn't kick in and fight for you until after like 12 months.
Yeah, but if you're fired, that doesn't mean that you wash out of the program, does it?
I don't know, but
no.
But nonetheless, I don't need to be like, I want work for the rest of my life. I want to be known as a good employee. So if he's going to give me a bad evaluation, he's my life's in his hands.
You worried about your permanent record?
No, I'm worried about employment. They keep people who are reliable. They keep people who are dependable. They keep people who are punctual.
Yeah, but this is just one jerk. You're not going to be working with him anymore.
Yeah, but if he holds my evaluation for 12 months, I got to be on his ass all the time.
So does it make sense for you to look for a different job site?
I don't know. Yeah, I guess so. But at the same time, I don't want to quit.
Well, don't think of it as quitting. Think of it as...
No, if this guy's annoyed with me, I'm going to stick around as long as I possibly can. I'm going to stick around and let this guy just, damn it, Parv, just get out of here. Oh, so all along you didn't want me around.
Well, that's weird.
See, it sounds like you have competing goals. You have not clarified in your own mind what the victory conditions are here. Is it to antagonize him or is it to get the best possible reviews?
This guy, as far as I know, he is just wacky.
Yeah, the court takes judicial notice that this guy is just wacky.
So I have to stand up for the little people, the little hands out in America.
Little people don't give a fuck about you, my friend.
No. But the people coming up behind me cannot be treated this way.
They don't, yeah.
So if somebody was to say, hey, dude, no, you don't, no, that's wrong. You're wrong. No, this is what happened. Maybe he'll start changing to the point where you don't jump to conclusions on an apprentice.
You think it works that way?
No, I don't. No, but
I mean, in your life, has it ever worked that way?
No, I don't think so. But what
you're doing is honorable. There's no question
so
about it.
So am I supposed to go through life, Robin, and just saying, I'm sorry, it's my fault. If it's not my fault, I got to stand up for myself. He can't be telling me you did this wrong and I didn't do it wrong. And I say, well, no, I didn't do it wrong. He goes, oh, okay, well, I thought it was. Okay, that's what you know, it's like he's jumping to conclusions. It's like he has a beef with me. It's like he's looking for me to fail.
Right.
So I'm over and above trying to do everything perfect, double checking my work, right, just in case this little moron comes up to me and says, nope, I did it right. It's just, it's a very weird kind of
it's a fucked up dynamic. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I get that.
And the 30-year veteran told me today, he goes, unfortunately, you just got to say sorry and you know, don't talk back to them and don't make him wrong and just kind of take it. I'm like, phew.
I think that's right.
I do too. I mean, I'd listen to the 30-year veteran And I know it's disappointing, but oftentimes life works that way. Sometimes entrenched power, positions of entrenched power, are filled with assholes.
So am I going to be this way, and this is going to get instilled in me, and then when somebody 5 years from now becomes an apprentice and I'm teaching him, am I going to be a jerk to that
guy?
Did you hear
no.
what Bob, that's what Bob said last week. Bob said, during Bob said he was treated this way, and he determined that as a result, he was not going to treat anyone that way. So he was going to break the cycle of violence.
That's exactly why a lot of these people beat their wives.
Because of
bad work behavior.
Well, I think there's a connection there. I don't think that's a joke.
No, it's not. You know what? A lot of the guys that I work with are divorced. And I bet you a lot of has to, they don't say anything to their foreman. They go home and they yell at their kids and they yell at their wives and they yell at everybody at home.
Right.
And then their kids and wives are like, wait a second. Where do we do? Why don't you yell at the foreman? I can't yell at the foreman. I'm not allowed to. I got to yell at you guys.
Well, here's the thing that I had to come to grips with along the way with working with assholes. This guy's an asshole. I mean, let's say we take judicial notice of that. And okay. And that is that it's impossible to change their behavior.
It is.
And so how do I move through this experience and extract from it what I need to get on to the next step? And everybody figures that out for themselves. So what is it? You know, you choose your battles carefully, right? You can win the battle and lose the war. So I'm not putting those into the speech, by the way. Those are stupid-ass things to say. But I think you sort of figure out, oh, wow, this is what an asshole looks like. Mm-hmm. So, you know, number one, it may not be possible in your situation, but sort of you stay out of the way, right? Because people are they're looking to pick a fight for you, but they can't pick a fight if they can't see you. So you kind of just, you know, you move out of the line of sight. And you spend more time with the master plumbers who, first of all, will get to know you as someone who's really good. So that when you move on to the next job site, they're going to go, I don't know what that asshole was thinking about. I've worked with Parviz. He's an incredible fucking worker. He shows up early. He's a great guy. I mean, those are the people that you build your stock and trade with, right? Which is you build your rep.
Grassroots.
Right. You build your rep with these other guys. I don't know if I'm right or not. I'm just telling you my own experience, which is you build a consensus around the asshole. The asshole will always be the asshole. You can find people in this world in practice of law that think that I'm a shitty lawyer. Small number of people that think that I really suck. Greater number of people that think that I'm just like an amazing fucking smart, funny, you know, talented, all of those things that I really want. And so I could spend all of my energy trying to change the asshole's opinion, or I could just, you know, you throw out the top score, throw out the bottom score. It's like the Olympics, right? We don't pay attention to the Russian judge, we don't pay attention to the German judge, and we just average all the other scores together. And I
should say something. When he pulled us aside today and he went off on us, I did not say a word. Because I realized I'm not going to fight this guy. There's no reason. I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, God, you really have a beef with us. You have a beef with me? Or you just have a beef with being in charge. And I just looked at him through my little safety goggles.
I'm guessing even with little boy's hands.
Little boy's hands.
He still looks small.
He still looks small.
I would imagine
I'm guessing.
So.
You know, one thing that I think I would add to what Robin said, not only will you impress these other people, these other master plumbers, but everyone, you will find, I think, that everyone knows this guy is an ass.
We're out of time.
I think so.
Yeah, we're out of time. Sorry, guys.
All right.
So listen, take care of yourself, right?
Thank you.
And you too, you take care of yourself. He's up already. We'll be back next week with show number 19. Send us emails. Give us some things to tell the graduates. Robin@schnauzerlogic.com. Until then, I love you, Mom. I miss you, Dad. Show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. Have yourself a great week. We'll see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.